What's up? This is MC Lars. You are listening to Journey into Comics.
You!
And here we go.
Ladies and gentlemen, you're listening to Journey into Comics, a podcast about comic books, video games, movies, television, and everything nerd, with your hosts, Nate Phillips and Brandon Stone.
You're gonna see some serious shit.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to another episode of Journey into Comics. It's episode 124. I'm your host, Nate. As always, joining me, the Chris Jericho to my Kevin Owens. He's my best friend and my good pal. Brando, how's it going?
How's it going, buddy? That's quite the intro that you just gave me.
Well, yeah, I mean, you got to do it right, you know? I have a lot of energy, Brando. There's been a lot of going-ons in the Journey into Comics world that have me just really invigorated and kind of refreshed for this year.
Oh, no doubt, man. Oh, as I lose my voice entirely. I've been talking a lot the past 2 days.
lots of podcasts going on.
A lot of podcasts. Yeah, dude, no doubt, man. I am just, it is really neat. I mean, of course, we talked about it last episode about us being invited to come down and host all the panels and happenings at LaFeyCon. And, of course, us doing a live show and getting to be involved with that and everything. And it feels really cool, like, to be involved with something in the community. And not just as us, you know, it's our project, it's our baby, it's Journey into Comics, it's our show. And it just, I was talking to, I can't remember if it was Mike or somebody, but I was talking to them and he just thought it was really interesting that, like, we're, like, it's almost like we're treating the podcast and the networking and everything, it's almost as if it were a band.
And I mean, really,
it kind of is, because, I mean, it's entertainment. So,
and we're booking gigs, kind of.
Yeah, man. And it's really weird because, you know, like, there are definitely times when we've done this show over the past couple of years where it kind of seems like we get into this, and I don't want to say lull, but just the very much day in, day out happenings of Journey to Comics, where we know we've got a show to do and we go and we do that show. We have great time when we do that show. We have a lot of fun. And then we go, well, dude, it's awesome, dude. I got to bounce. I'll see you next week. And then we kind of go our separate ways. And then there is, you know, then you get some reaching out, wanting to be on the show, talk about their project. And I'm like, how does he get these people? I'm like, how does he get guests for our show? How does this happen? And then I get us booked at VillainsCon. I get us this gig at LaFeyCon. And it's like, it's sometimes just like overwhelming. It almost kind of feels like, you know, there are times where maybe we don't maybe do enough, but then there's times where it just kind of happens and it comes around and more than what I expect happens from the show.
Yeah, I mean, the thing is, you know, when, again, I said this last show, when I started this, none of the things that are going on were really my expectation or anything I had as long-term goals for this show. Honestly, to even have a guest, I mean, I kind of played around with this idea that Sausage from Ink Master was going to do the show, and we had discussed it on Twitter that it would be something he would like to do. It never really happens, you know. Be that as it may.
I remember that. That was early on.
Yeah, I mean, I had just started, and I thought, what a better way to break it in than just to get this guy who, I love this guy's work as an artist. He's a big comic book fan. Like, let's riff and talk about comics, you know?
Mm-hmm. Now, did you just reach out to him, like email or whatever?
Well, what happened was, during the Ink Master season, like probably episode 2 or 3 of that season, which was season 4, they did a X-Men Day or some shit when X-Men Days of Future Past was going to come out. And he did a tattoo of Patrick Stewart's Professor X that was and fucking incredible. It was so realistic looking. It was so awesome. And I reached out to him and I was like, you know, I was like, I heard what you were saying on the show. Like, you're a huge fan of comics. Me too. Here's my earliest X-Men comic, which I think is like issue 14 or 15, somewhere in the teens. And he like got right back to me and we kind of kindled a little friendship that way. And then I eventually was like, hey, if you would be comfortable doing it, you know, and he was like, well, DM me and let's talk. And we did. And like I said, I think it just kind of was a mixture of things. He had just taken second place on Ink Master. You know, it's this kind of this new found fame thing. You know, he's just a guy. And I understand that it gets overwhelming when you got a lot of people going, oh my God, like, you did this thing. But, you know, that never, like I said, it never really mattered to me that that didn't happen, because other opportunities presented themselves, other things kind of came about, and we're here now. I only find guests because people who have been on the show recommend us. It's really weird in that regard. Like, you know, I don't know that we're the most, you know, necessarily reliable podcast in terms of scheduling always working out how we want it to, but you know, I mean, it feels good to know that the people we've had on are our peers appreciate what we've done. I mean, we are undefeated in Kickstarter projects backed successfully. So I guess that's some sort of like Undertaker WrestleMania record we're trying to uphold here.
Well, wait, didn't we have one that didn't meet it, but then they came back and we talked about it again, and that, and then that's when it did it?
Yeah, Black Suit of Death. That actually, that that comic is going to be coming to my doorstep very soon. They Ben just got his entire order of his first issue in the mail and did a live opening on Facebook. That was really cool to watch.
He was also the guy who created our newest logo, isn't he?
Yeah, yeah. Ben did the logo for Journey into Comics. Got it ready for us in the 100th. Everything kind of worked on that too, because after he did Journey into Comics, we had talked, and he was like, man, you know, I would love to do a logo for you guys. Like, I see this, you know, like, he's like, you ever read the Spirit comics? And I was like, yeah. And he's like, you know how on the first page, it'd be the Spirit, but it'd be like a part of a wall that had been destroyed, and it's like a huge background piece, and it kind of has this, like, angular thing. And I was like, yeah. And he's like, I want to do that for Journey into Comics. And I told him, I was like, oh, that'd be cool. I mean, we are having our 100th come up in, like, several months here. So, you know, if you think you can pull it off in that time, like, do it. And, like, the day of, right when we got to the con, he fucking messaged me and was like, hey, man, check your Dropbox. Boom.
Yeah, that was ridiculous. And I had no idea that you'd even talk to him about this.
I know. I was so excited to have that little surprise for the show. It was great.
And then I remember, I'm like, look. Can he make this? Can he do this? Can he get this for us? Can he get us a PNG? And I have like now that I know about it, I have all these requests.
And he was like, no problem. In a couple seconds here. Hold on.
Oh, yeah, dude, he did it. And that was just so awesome. Thank you so much for that. That was just great. It's a man. You think about, you know, I always wanted to do podcasting. I always wanted to come out, and I always wanted to do, you know, I guess sort of like talk radio, but not, I'm not doing it in the way that I ever thought I would be. I'm not doing it in a way that, you know, we have a show every day. You can get up in the morning, go grab your cup of coffee, go do a show. It's not like
I that. Wish.
You know, hey, you know, come on. Are you kidding me? If we were getting paid to do daily morning Journey into Comics, where we just show up and for 2 hours every day get a sit in like our PJs and robes sipping coffee, and we get to talk about nerdy shit every day.
And here's your latest update. You know?
What's changed since yesterday? Oh, not much. Nerdy news doesn't go up until like the afternoon because nobody's awake yet.
It's weird because not much has actually changed since I spoke with you yesterday.
No, not really. Not really.
On Journey into Wrestling. So it's you know, the whole guest thing mixed with the whole you booking us for cons, I think it's a testament to what we did in the band when we were part of Draxus, of just knowing you got to put yourself out there. You miss 100% of the shots you don't take.
Yep.
And if you don't aspire to, like, once the kind of the gear shifted and we started having guests on regularly and started doing different segments and bits and have a bunch of sound bites and buttons that I should play on the podcast, which you could technically play on the podcast, but I digress. Once all those things kind of became a reality, it kind of kicked into high gear of like, fuck, we should like try to do cool shit all the time. Like, it's a lot of fun. And it's really great now, Brando, because LaFiCon is the least amount of work we will probably have to do for a show while simultaneously being the most work for a show. Yeah. And I mean that because if you think about Villains Con, if you think about every fucking gig we've ever done as musicians together or apart, we have so little to bring to LaFiCon this year, like as far as equipment. It's super light, it's super easy to handle. It's an iPad and your fucking Zoom and some microphones. Cake. There's no heavy-ass board. There's no awkwardness of that. And, like, it seems like everything's going to go really smoothly. So I'm looking forward to that light aspect of it, while secretly, in every day in the shower, I, like, ponder and dread, like, okay, how many guests are they going to have for panels, and how many people am I going to need to learn about that I'm guessing I might not know about? Because I don't want to go into this being dumb and just assuming that we can riff with these people. I'm sure we could. We're professional enough. But I want to have some modicum of decency where we know a little bit about what they're bringing to the table.
Like, the best thing, though, dude, is that, like, so check it out. It's like, okay, we've got this many people. And say, you know, like, what, I think day one is 6 hours, day two is 5. You know, say they don't have enough people to fill out the entire time, you know, and it's like, well, guess what we can do? We can do more shows.
Like, yes, we can.
Because it is nothing for us to sit down and talk about anything, or to do a taste test, or to play a game, or to just BS, and being in front of people wouldn't change that. Being on stage wouldn't change that. The time that we got to do Villains Con, I was still coming down from the Trek panel. So it's like, by the time I sat down, like, we had to get going so quickly that I remember the Jimmy John's guy was walking around with a little sample saying, hey, can you plug us? Can you say something over the microphone to just give a shout out to Jimmy John's? And I said, sure. And he goes, you want a free sample? I said, yes, because I am hungry. And that sandwich sat up there almost the entire show, because I didn't even get a chance to eat. We just had to sit down and go do the show. And if you hear me at the start of that show, like, I'm more like, my delivery is a lot more slow and deliberate, but I'm like so fast because I'm going a mile a minute, just going, and now we're going. And it takes me a few minutes to slow down. But it was cool because it never stopped being fun. It never stopped. That live show is honestly the most fun I've ever had doing the show. Because even though maybe the attendance for Villains Con, as we said, maybe it wasn't as high as what we could have aspired to be, but how many of the people who were there did we lure out with just us talking?
Lots.
We did. And we mentioned it on that show. There were only two people left from, you know, either they were still from the Trek panel, or they heard that we were going to do a live show of some sorts, and they go, okay, I'll go sit down and see what this is about. And we got more people, and we got people to ask questions. And, man, sitting on the stage like that, it was every bit as gratifying to me, Nate, as anything that we ever did in the band.
Yeah, it's weird, right?
And I mean, it was a very similar feeling. Getting done with that show felt just like getting done playing a set, except I was less tired.
Way less tired and less deaf too.
Yes, and I mean, I want to say we packed our stuff up because we were, you know, you brought the board down. We packed it up, went back up into the GES game room they had off to the side of the arena there. And then we set it up and we did another podcast, didn't we? Didn't we do Journey to Wrestling with Tony?
You, actually, there were three podcasts because I'm pretty sure, didn't you guys do an early Game Addicts podcast?
Yes, but...
With Tony?
Yeah, but did we... Because it was Tony and it was Daniel Connor.
Correct. That was while I was doing the Power Ranger panel.
Yes.
And then after I came up from the Power Ranger panel, we got right into Journey into Wrestling because that was with the broken Matt Hardy...
what was that thing called?
Brother Nero!
Final Deletion.
Yes.
Yeah, it was. It was because it never made air, or it might have made air. I don't remember it making air. But I was sitting there with Daniel and Tony, and I said, "Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to Journey into Wrestling." We're not doing that show, are we? No, we're not doing. We're doing Welcome to Game Addicts.
I think that is the intro of the show.
You know, I might have actually taken that out when I. When I re-uploaded that to the Game Addicts Podbean, just because it's like, it doesn't make sense for anybody who's just finding Game Addicts for the first time. And I wanted a lot of those episodes. I messed around with the intro a couple times, and I took out all of the early intros that had talking and just replaced them with the one that we ended up using a little bit more. So I went back and I George Lucas'd those early episodes a little bit. I didn't Blu-ray George Lucas them, so it wasn't that bad.
Well, that's good.
But you know what, Nate? We need to get right into something because something happened this week that caught my attention. And this has sort of been circling around for like a month. A lot of back and forth here, but Ben Affleck's not going to direct the Batman.
Nope. I think this is kind of a smart call, Brando. I know most people are going to probably disagree with me here, but not putting him as the director allows for him to focus on his performance as an actor and really turn the heat up. He needs to. The entirety of the DC movieverse is at this point hinging on Wonder Woman, Justice League, and then this Batman movie. And if the Batman movie doesn't hit it out of the park, man... It's not looking good, you know?
Well, yeah, and some people are, you know, were saying that he wasn't happy with how the script is going. Him and Geoff Johns wrote the script, and then I can't remember his name offhand. I don't have his name in front of me, but the guy that wrote Argo and BVS has rewritten their draft for this movie. And one thing that he said is that if the script didn't live up to what he felt like was on par with what he wanted to do, he was not going to direct it. And then he kind of went back and said, no, I'm directing. And now he says he's not. One other thing that he said is that he wanted to get a newer batsuit designed that would be more comfortable for him to wear behind the camera. Because once you get in the suit, he's in it all day, and he's got to be in front of the camera doing his thing and walk immediately back, see the shots, so he's doing double duty.
And yeah.
I kind of agree with you. As much as I think he's a very talented director and that he could do an awesome Batman movie, I kind of agree with you, and he needs to not overexert himself, because I feel like if it's that difficult for him and that hot and that exhausting, by the time he's done with this movie, he's going to be done.
Okay, so my question, Brando, and I agree with you, I think that it would wear him. I mean, he would age like 10 years just doing one Batman movie, you know? But I task you with this question. Who is going to step up and actually direct this son of a bitch? I know who my pick is to do it. I doubt that's who they get. But I know who I want. And I think you know who I'm speaking about.
I think I know who you think I know who you're speaking about.
You know that I know, you know that I know that you know that I know what you're thinking. I know what I'm thinking.
Are you thinking that it should be a guy who's directed Ben before?
Yep.
Yeah, same here. a guy who's been doing some great work on some DC television?
No, not just some great work, some of the best work on DC television.
We're definitely on the same page because we were on the same page last week with this guy too.
Yeah, it's all about Kevin Smith here, not to proverbially suck him off on air, but he's great, man. I don't know. I think he, and especially, I mean, come on. Ben Affleck took the Daredevil role to be Batman, and because he didn't expect that to ever happen, and I know that they're two different characters, but there are some similarities in the idea of playing a superhero. Now Ben Affleck is the Batman. He is, right now, generation, what, 4 or 5 Batman. So, honestly, man, I think Kevin Smith is the only person I trust enough to direct him at this point in his career, all things considered. It can't be Zack Snyder. I'm fucking sorry.
No, I don't want Zack. I mean,
what, are you going to have a rookie Geoff Johns start directing now, coming out of doing comic books? Like, he's not a movie director.
I don't know who I would get, to be honest with you. Because, man, it's almost like, do you want to go on that limb and get somebody who's expensive? But you got to think about any director that you bring on board is going to, you know, then put their vision on the thing. And that's something that is, as you said, their success hinges on this movie. You know, it has been a long time since Warner Brothers has fucked up a Batman movie. 1997.
Oh, yeah, that's a hot, steamy pile.
So, granted, okay, I do not think, and you can quote me on this later on, I don't think anything they do for Ben Affleck's Batman movie is going to be that bad.
Bad in comparison to
where we're at now, as far as, like, comic book movies at now. I mean, it can be bad, you know, because we've sort of evolved into another level of comic book movies since then. I mean, that was like anybody who criticized like Ben Affleck as Batman. I'm like, you clearly don't remember George Clooney, you know? You know, it's like you don't remember, you don't appreciate where we've been in this journey with Batman on the big screen. I don't even like Val Kilmer that much. And you know, I mentioned this the other day at work. I can't remember how we got on this, but Batman Forever, there's a scene, and on Junior Wrestling, we kind of talk about this, about selling, right? And Batman is a character who should have no fear, or at least show no fear, right?
Correct.
You know, I don't really recall Michael Keaton's Batman showing fear.
Nah, come on, you want to get nuts?
Let's get nuts. And here, let me strap a bomb to your chest, you know?
Exactly.
And okay, so you have Val Kilmer, and you get almost a redo of a scene from the first film, from the 89 Batman, where the dude jumps over the fence, and he's got, like, katanas and blades, and he's like, hey, yeah, 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 la, la, la. And then Keaton's just standing there with his, like fisticuffs, right? Like, bring it on. Except now, at the very beginning of Batman Forever, some dude has, like, these things in his hands, and he's, like, doing his martial arts thing, and this look, this sheer look of, from Batman is like, huh? As a kid, you don't notice this shit, okay? You don't notice how bad it is. And I think Val Kilmer's a great actor. I think Clooney's a great actor. I just don't think that necessarily there were great fits for the bat, you know? And
oh, man, you just set this up so beautifully, didn't you? You just, like, tossed it into the air perfectly for the alley-oop. Because let's go into the segue, Brando. I want to do a little fantasy casting. You just said you don't think Kilmer or Clooney were good for the role of Batman. And I agree with you. And actually, to some extent, some of Christian Bale's performance that maybe didn't necessarily have to do with him as much as editing is concerned and some of the voice stuff they did. In some regards, I think that too. I thought he was, you know, anyways, I digress. What I want to do now, man, is I think let's go ahead and I'll toss it to you first, or I can go first. It doesn't matter. I want to fantasy cast some major characters in a Batman movie and a general, like, rough idea of some of what you would do with the story. It doesn't have to be complete or super in-depth, but it's just, if you were given the opportunity as a casting director to make a world with, you're going to get your first pick every time. Whoever your first pick is for the role, they're going to be cast no matter what. So I want to know what goes on in your head when that's offered to you.
Okay, so I'm doing a Batman Year One story.
Cool.
Okay, so we're going with a younger, smaller looking Batman. So we're not going with the big bodybuilder type. We're going with a young, handsome guy to play our Bruce Wayne becoming Batman. And I'm casting Kit Harington.
Oh, that's fucking awesome. Oh, man, he would make such a dope Bruce Wayne. Oh, all like, if he like fully cleaned up, mm-hmm. man, yeah. Like, continue, sorry.
Like, all you gotta do is go to his IMDb page and just, like, okay, he's a little scruffy, clean that up, crop that hair up a little bit, and you're like, that's Bruce Wayne. And it's
oh,
like,
God, and his acting chops, he could be such a badass.
Mm-hmm. There was some trailer that we saw, me and my wife saw yesterday. He was in it, and he's playing some Southern boy. He had a Southern accent, and it was really off-putting. We're like, wait, what? Because he looks like Jon Snow. He just sounds like he's from like Kentucky or Arkansas somewhere. It was really weird. Oh, yeah, but definitely, yeah. He's my Bruce Wayne pick.
Love it.
And, like, that was just a gut feeling. I'm like, he has to. As far as anybody else, it might take me a while to figure out Alfred.
Well, you know, you don't have to rack your brain too hard. If you don't think it's a certain character, you don't necessarily have to cast them, just the ones that are most important to what you're trying to tell, you know?
He can play older, though. So Kit was born in 86, and this guy is about 14 years older than him.
Okay.
So, recently, on Gotham, they're going with kind of a younger Alfred, right? And that, in comparison to, like, you know, a loving grandpa from the originals. Okay.
Gotham's Alfred fights with guns and throws a mean left hook. So, yes, he's not Grandfather of the Year. He's more like a militant badass.
So I'm going with a former British military guy turned butler, and he's only 14, 15 years older than Kit is, but they can age him up a little bit and make him kind of like grizzled into his maybe like, how old is he now then? Be 40 something. Ewan McGregor.
Nice. I like that.
I feel like it's different. I feel like they would have good personality clicking together. Obviously, in a very weird way, you had Liam Neeson, who is Qui-Gon, train Christian Bale. Now you have Obi-Wan training Kit Harington. So you had two Jedi Masters training Batman.
That's awesome.
I actually didn't mean to make that happen, but it just happened.
I dig it.
Who's the love interest? Who should play the love interest?
Oh, man, that's hardcore. I don't know. That depends on where you want to go. It's got to be a believable love interest, because one thing that's for sure with Batman, all his love interests are strong, independent women, you know?
Yeah.
They can hold their own, so you gotta pick somebody who can portray that, who's also kinda in Kit's age range, you know, that makes it, again, believable.
we're just going to film this in England.
Sure, it's an all British cast.
I'm going Emma Watson.
Oh, I love it. Who's she though? Which character?
I don't know. I haven't decided yet. If you're going that early, I mean.
Change up the mythos, make it Lois Lane. Free Superman, you know.
Yeah. Because she could already work for the planet.
Word.
All right, so if we're going year one, who should be the villain? You know, early villain. So we're talking mobsters. So do you want to do Black Mask as a villain for this movie?
Well, it's your movie. I mean.
Oh, okay. So you're gonna do yours later too, or?
Oh yeah. I got one.
Okay. So you want me to go first then?
Not fully intentionally. I mean. I have some very specific things about my movie kind of plotted out. I was thinking about this earlier when I messaged you.
Well, I'm glad you were thinking of it because I'm just making it up on the go. literally, I think this is how they wrote the, Man of Steel BVS. They just said, what actor should we get? Sure. Okay. So then what's that person going to play? Oh, okay. Then what's this person going to play? Black Mask.
Ooh, that's awesome. If you're doing Black Mask, man, you got to have somebody who's got a little bit of an American gangster in them. And that's a tough one, bro. Oh.
You all right over there?
Yeah, I just know who I would cast if it was me casting for Black Mask. Yeah, this is tough. I mean, also, if you're at home listening right now and you want to come up with a list of or like a pitch for a Batman movie with your fantasy cast, just hit us up on Twitter or Instagram or Facebook. Post what your fantasy casting would be. We'd love to hear from you.
My Black Mask would be Josh Brolin.
Oh, that's cool. The guy who plays Thanos. I like it. I was thinking Willem Dafoe.
Green Goblin.
Kind of a little bit of an... Well, but yeah, he could play just such a visceral gangster, you know? And I think Brolin could as well.
Well, see, I would have, a lot of Brolin time before, the actual, burning, the grafting or anything like that. I don't know. Yeah, I just kind of feel like he would be a really good villain to just a very good caricature of a villain, I guess. Because you can do a really good origin with him, and not even have it almost kind of like how they do in Batman Begins or something, where it takes you almost an hour and a half almost before you see him in the damn bat suit. I mean, you can just, it's almost like he doesn't even really become Black Mask until the last act of the damn movie, you know?
Yeah, that's climactic.
Yeah. All right, dude, so tell me yours.
Okay, well, I was thinking about it, and, I honestly believe that this person has played a lot of pivotal roles already across multiple fandoms, which is hard to say for someone who, is still pretty green as far as I know as an actor. But I think Oscar Isaac would be a phenomenal Bruce Wayne. The guy that played Poe and also played Apocalypse in X-Men Apocalypse. I think he could bring something very special to the Bruce Wayne role. I think there's just something about his... If you kind of look at how he is as Poe, and he's kind of this, he's got that funny, who goes first? You go first, I go first. That little, off-kilter humor is good for Bruce Wayne, while also having the toughness and the violence and the grittiness of Apocalypse. Bridging those two worlds together, I think, creates an interesting look into the psyche of Bruce. My movie would take place kind of in the middle of his career, if you will, not Dark Knight Returns era and not year one, but somewhere where he's seasoned. He's seen a lot. He's done a lot. But it would be his first encounter with two specific factions. And how I would set the movie is the main protagonist that you would know about right out of the gate would be Clayface. I think Clayface could be played by any number of characters. It could be, honestly, the first person that comes to mind that I think would be interesting to play is Clayface, just because I could see him with the CGI look. And he's already tied to Batman right now because he's in Gotham. But Michael Chiklis, I think he would make a great Clayface. Just that, again, violence, rage. You look at the character story of the Clayface character and what that person goes through. I think it'd be awesome to have him as Clayface terrorizing Batman. There's the element of shape-shifting, so he can, multiple different people can be this character, and it's, you know, the whole doppelganger surprise element, who are you really fighting? Which is kind of like Mystique, I understand that, but I would do it a little bit differently, and obviously Clayface, when he hulks out and goes crazy and has those huge, like, thinking about the animated series, those huge, like, mallet hands or knife arms or whatever. That'd be amazing imagery to see.
There really is something special about that, isn't there?
Oh, yeah. The Thing, because he played The Thing. I get what you did there. That's fine.
Also, so you said protagonist, and I'm pretty sure you meant antagonist.
I meant antagonist. You knew what I meant.
Okay, so because for a second, I'm like, wait a minute. Are you building this movie like to like make Batman the villain?
Yes! No, I mean, you could argue for that. But really, so you got, you know, Oscar Isaacs as Bruce. I'm so sorry if that was loud, everybody. That was just a remote control diving off of a chair. But Oscar Isaacs as Bruce / Batman. You could put probably someone like Peter Capaldi would make for a great Alfred now. Yes. That he's getting out of doing doing Doctor Who. But here's the twist in the story. Clayface wouldn't be acting on his own. And the whole subplot of the movie, the whole thing that Batman never knows but the audience is always in the know about, would be the Court of Owls existence and telling that story. And the beautiful thing is, cast a bunch of new people who are up-and-coming talented actors for the Court of Owls. They don't have to be seasoned. Maybe one seasoned fucking dude. Like, I almost want to say, like, Gene Hackman is the head of the Court of Owls. You know, this old-timey, you know, Anthony Hopkins-type character there. They would be running the show in the background. Now, do you have Robin? That's a great argument. Yes, of course you have Robin. Who plays next to Oscar Isaac as Robin? That's hard. That's difficult. Well, as a tip of the hat and a wag of the finger, the kid, I can't think of his name, it's David something, but he plays Bruce Wayne on Gotham. Because by that time, he would be old enough, and it would be so right. It would be such a perfect little nod to the universe, you know? And that's pretty much it. I don't think you need to involve Catwoman. I don't think there needs to be... Obviously, you got to have a Jim Gordon. Jim Gordon, I mean... I don't know who I would cast as Jim Gordon. I guess that's a question for another time. But that would kind of be my fantasy casting with fantasy story.
Yeah, I didn't cast Jim.
Yeah, neither did I.
Maybe we'll just leave it uncasted for now. Now, did you saw that they announced Clayface animated series pop vinyl, right?
Yeah.
I figured that you would have seen that, but.
Oh yeah, the animated series pops are cool for me being a guy who's on his way out of pop vinyl game, just because some of the corporate side of the world that's going on there and the way they're running their company right now, things seem in a decline, but I digress.
Let's get into that. So, like, because that's one thing that you shifted into after comics was pop vinyl collecting. So yep. Like, what's going on within like the Funko company that is deterring you specifically from collecting pops?
It feels like 1990s comic books all over again. Nothing is truly exclusive. Nothing is truly hard to find. Anything that is quote-unquote truly exclusive or truly hard to find or truly something that only X amount of people can get, they still hoard to three or four people who control the entirety of the market. So if you're not one of the lucky people who get somebody who's giving it away who doesn't know what they have or whatever, it's gotten to the point where, you know, it's a mass oversaturation. How many, you know, GameStop exclusive pop vinyls do you see on their shelves for $6.99 or lower because they don't sell? Because they don't, they say it's an exclusive, but then there's 100 of them at the store. That doesn't make it exclusive. You know, and also, if there are some on the floor, you know, I get it. I understand people are seeing this as some sort of money-making machine. But the reality of it is it should be for collecting. And the problem is they've made it impossible for collectors. They're putting out so many pops so quickly in so many categories all the time, you can't even remotely keep up. I mean, the Stranger Things pops just came out. I want them so badly, and there's no way. There's no way I could afford 13 pops brand new right out the gate. And that's with having to find chases that are going to ultimately be more expensive than the regular pops because people are criminal. They see chase, and companies know now. Funko has educated them that chase means more expensive and more rare, so they charge higher prices. And I don't know, as a whole, it just seems like the whole foundation got real shaky real quick because a lot of people who weren't in it for the love of Funko, such as myself, but were in it for the love of dollars, which, mad respect, if that's your hustle, fucked the market. Because there's so many distributors now that there's so many copies of everything that Funko thinks they've got this empire. I mean, they're about to go public. And while that's fine and well, go public, I don't give a fuck. I feel like if you're going to go public, you need to really be listening to your fans, and they don't. They don't care. Here's a big thing that also turned me off from Funko. It was my biggest gripe ending 2016. These subscription boxes they have. You've got Legion of Collectors, you've got Marvel Collector Corps, you've got Smuggler's Bounty for Star Wars, they've got a new one out for Disney. You've got Nerd Block and Loot Crate and all this shit. Well, specifically the subscription boxes from Funko, your Collector Corps and Smuggler's Bounty and Legion of Collectors for DC. Those three. When you sign up now in the contract, it says they're not responsible if your pops come in damaged. And they won't replace boxes. Well, what does that mean? Well, it also means that on the same warning, they say these are meant to actually not be in box. And we want you to take them out of the box. So now, instead of appeasing the larger market, which is the in-box collector, they've alienated us in-box collectors. And it's just like, oh, well, if I bought something brand new at a store and it was any other product, I wouldn't want it beat to shit right away. So why are you treating me differently because it's a toy? You know? And I don't know, that just some of those politics there have me really frustrated with Funko as a company. You know, I mean, there are still some lines I'm going to collect. I'm still going to collect all the Dragon Ball Z pops. It's going to take me fucking forever, but I'm still going to do it. I love them. They're so cool. I'll still probably collect Flash and Arrow and any DC TV and stuff. But the larger lines, the Marvel lines, the Star Wars lines, I mean, those lines are over 200 pops both at this point. That's crazy. If you want to have a complete collection of just Star Wars, that's half my collection now as a whole. And I sold a lot of Star Wars, so that's just other pops making up for the Star Wars that's gone. And I don't know, Brando. It's one of those things. I'm seeing it for what it is. It's not the, let's say, the Beanie Baby crash. But now is the time that it kind of seems like what I predicted is going to happen is happening, where the market's going to crash. People are going to get out of the game for good. A lot of the pops that I really wanted to have, I'll be able to get for really fucking cheap. Funko will slow down again, and things will kind of be right as rain for a while, and the market can rebuild. It has to. It's just teetering too much. There are just too many people who are putting up sponsored posts because they, you know, had a $12,000, you know, college fund gifted to them or some shit, so they went out and invested exclusively in Funko and are now just trying to sell Funko Pops. I mean, those people hurt the whole entire game so much more, because the more people are buying as distributors, the more they're saying, oh, well, people want this product, so they keep thinking we need to pump out more. We need to sell more. That means X amount of people need them, which means there's, I mean, I think now, Brando, honestly, there are probably pops in this world that outnumber people. There are probably more of certain common pops than there are people that collect pop vinyls.
I haven't bought a pop vinyl in a long time.
And see, that's surprising to me, because some of the pops that recently came out in just the Dragon Ball Z line alone, I thought for sure you were going to just instantly have all of them.
Well, it's like I've got the entire first set. And I remember for the longest time, I didn't care if I had non-Super Saiyan Goku, simply because I'm one of those guys that I had a Goku, so I didn't care. But I did end up getting the original, and then I've got the Vegeta one signed, and then I've got Piccolo, Frieza, Cell, Super Saiyan Goku, and then I do have the Golden Frieza non-Red Eye. And I don't have the Super Saiyan God Goku or anything like that. But, you know, I wouldn't mind having the next set, but it got to a point where I didn't want to spend money on it anymore. It was never something that I like had to have. Like, okay, so yeah, once I started the Dragon Ball set, I wanted to have the rest of them. And once I started the you know, Next Generation Star Trek set, I wanted to have all of them but the Klingon, because I just didn't like the way that Klingon looked.
Plus you have Worf.
I have the Klingon that counts for TNG, so I didn't care. I wanted the bridge set. And I mean, yeah, okay, so Locutus doesn't really count, but he kind of does. But I like Locutus more than I like just random Klingons. I'm not racist against Klingons, I swear. But and then I've got random. I've got Ezio. I got Harry Potter with sword. I've got Batman and Joker from Arkham. I don't have any of the rest of the Arkham ones. I've got Jon Snow and Jaime Lannister with Bronze Hand. Then I got the Crow. And I think I got Luke Skywalker Jedi, who's like worth like $30 now somewhere.
And, hell yeah.
And then we've got some, oh yeah, I've got Herschel. Not Bloody Stump Leg, but just Herschel. And then Caitlin has Castiel from Supernatural with, it's the one with the wings. And then we got How to Train Your Dragon.
Toothless. Oogie Boogie.
We have Oogie Boogie, we have Mrs. Potts and Chip.
And yeah.
And Caitlin wants some more Disney stuff. So, see, to me, man, these things are like, they're not terribly expensive. But when you think that I've spent $7 to $12 for any one of these, and you're even worse than I am as far as like, because you're kind of all over the spectrum, is like, I can honestly say that I've never paid more than $12 for a pop.
I can't say that.
I know you can't, which is why I said you're kind of in the worst part of that spectrum. I'm trying to get out of like collectibles. Oh, I have my Mass Effect ones, which pisses me off because I actually do want the rest of the Mass Effect pops.
Expensive.
Yes, they got expensive fast, and I did not jump on that when I should have, when they were still $10 to $15. So now I need what? Garrus, Rex, and Miranda. but I'm not getting them now because they just jumped up. Like, I think Rex is like over $30, if not higher. And then they announced the Andromeda ones. I don't even care. Like, I know I'm going to enjoy Andromeda, but I'm not, like, they said, hey, check out these pops for these characters you don't know yet.
So you're like, no.
Yeah, no, I don't even know who these guys are. I don't even know which characters I'm going to like. I mean,
that's what happened with The Force Awakens. They dropped that line in like the summer before that movie came out. It was like, why the fuck do I want to buy all these characters I have no idea about?
Mm-hmm.
And then, of course, I still did. That was smart, but I digress.
No, I'm glad you went into that because I can kind of see it. I mean, when this thing kind of blew up, it was like certain, like, I remember the excitement of finding out Dragon Ball is getting a pop set. And now it's like, I just saw where they're doing 90s Nickelodeon cartoons.
Yeah, super awesome. But fuck, I don't have that kind of money. I want all those sets.
I mean, Caitlin wants them, but...
Are you kidding me? Rugrats pops? Come the fuck on. And they just released...
Pop. Yeah.
Oh, and I mean, like, okay, on the flip side, think about, like, South Park pops that just came out. They've got that zombie Kenny.
Mysterion. I want Mysterion.
Mysterion's awesome. Yeah. So, man, I don't know. It's frustrating. Maybe the market will pick back up. Maybe some things in my life will change. Things circumstantially will alter. And, you know, maybe this will all turn around. But right now, it's not hanging out long. And if you're a pop collector and you've got some of these higher dollar ones, get out while you still can. That's my advice to any collector. If you've got them and you just have them for the dollar bills, sell that shit now. Because in about a couple months, they're not going to be worth what they were.
Maybe I can get those Mass Effect pops then.
There you go. Then that's the love of collecting, Brando. Exactly. I would rather the whole market crash and you be able to get the Mass Effect set and be happy. Look at how cool these look. Look how proud of them I am. It doesn't matter how much they were worth. Than it to be, oh yeah, well, the Garrus pop is like $400 now. No one will ever afford to have one, you know? That's like Beavis and Butthead right now. Apart are $100 a piece.
Get out of here.
Not even kidding you.
And they can't even put, like, the band names on the shirts, can they?
Correct. Also, Jay and Silent Bob, over $200 together. Jeez. You know what I'm saying? And I passed on Beavis and Butthead, and I had Jay and Silent Bob and got rid of them. So, I don't know, my friend. It's hard to say how things play out, you know? But anyways... Let's get back on track here. Did you read The New Walking Dead, Brando?
I did.
What's your gut reaction? What's the first thing that pops in your head on the other side of The Walking Dead? 163.
You know, they've had a couple of really high, intense impact episodes, or issues, I guess, I should say. And this was right along there with it. I don't understand why they thought that damn gate was going to hold.
Yeah, that was dumb.
Like, I don't... I feel like that was, like, first 6 months mistake to make, not 3 or 4 years into this apocalypse mistake to make. Like, they have thousands of these things. Like, oh, they'll hold. And, yeah, the walls held, but the gate didn't. And... I was, wondering, like, right before it broke, I'm like, do they have this thing reinforced? And then right when I thought that, I went, nope. No, they do not. This was the 25-cent issue, right?
Correct.
Yeah. So, I mean, this had, they called this the, like, almost like jumping on issue. So, like, they wrote this and framed this issue in a way that if you've never read The Walking Dead before, now's a great time to jump in.
I'd agree.
And, well, yeah. But, you know, I liked it. But at the same time, it was like... Did it seem to just go by really fast? like reading it.
Yeah, the issue did not seem to last a long time. And the one thing that I was hoping we haven't had in a while, Brando, we've not had a massive cliffhanger, oh shit moment. Like, they haven't left me going, what the fuck? I mean, we were going to talk about what I think they're going to do on the other side of this and beyond. But I agree. I felt like this was a little dragging, this issue. And then it just was over. Like, it was slow. And the story was trying to build, and then next thing you knew, it was done.
I liked how it really seemed like Negan was just kind of waking up from a nap. Hey, what's going on? What's that noise? And he's like, doesn't have a jacket on or anything. He's like, rubbing his head. Oh, man, I'm tired.
Oh, God, there's so much to say about Negan, Brando, in this issue, because he had such a little part of this issue. He's not, you know, on every page. He doesn't have a huge, brilliant monologue that makes you laugh or anything. But his presence is so impactful. And I think it impacts not just this issue, not just the story there and telling in the immediate future. This is something that, like, we're still going to feel issues down the road, I feel like this small act of kindness from Negan, saving Rick's life, people, he saved Rick Grimes' life, and, you know, obviously said, you know, well, are we even now, or whatnot, but,
even though I'm the one that messed your leg up?
Yeah, honestly, I feel like the Negan saving Rick is going to come back in a way that either is impacted by Rick sacrificing his life to save Negan's in an instant of, you know, craziness happening. There's still a lot lurking. You know, the Whisperers did not go away. They're just in retreat. You got to think the Saviors are on the outskirts waiting for their time to strike. It is entirely possible that Negan and Rick get themselves in a situation where one of them is going to die, and Negan or Rick sacrifices their self for the other one. I see it happening just by this little tease here where Negan saved Rick's life.
It's interesting because to have such an impactful villain come in and change the entire game of the series and to have this character transform into almost like another one of the main protagonists.
I mean, Brando, you could slice this as his Negan is the biggest story in comic books of redemption.
In a weird way. I mean, you know, I've always thought of him as Rick's Joker, and maybe he kind of always will, but I read one of the letter hacks and how somebody writing was just not happy with how Negan's character is changing. And I think that, you know, he's evolving in a way that we don't expect. And with that comes humanity, because what I'm trying to say, I guess, is that, like, the way that he's evolving as a character is probably more human than you can imagine. Because we get introduced to Negan as he's already broken and put in power, and this all, you know, powerful, crazy individual, and then they lock him up for 2 years, and then when we get fast forwarded, we see Negan, and we get all these teases of old Negan with his smile and sitting there with the cell door wide open. And all these chances to do all these things. And we're like waiting for him to do it, but he's not doing it. And then I think that we as readers, we haven't got the inside of the head view on where Negan is at right now. And we've been slowly becoming, you know, have been catching up with that, you know, with that narrative. But, like, I think all of us are being taken surprised by this, because we weren't given the slow turn. Instead, it's just being, here is Negan, here's what he's doing, and then he keeps doing these things that surprise us, whereas maybe if we had been inside his head for 2 years, this wouldn't be surprising to us at all.
Yeah. Well, you gotta think, Rick saves his life, ultimately. Could have cut him down, could have put Negan out of his misery. Now we're learning Negan was really fucked up when all that shit was going on anyways, because he was still dealing with the loss of his wife, or soon-to-be wife, you know, and all this drama is going on, and the whole... I mean, he's a man possessed. He lost the only thing he cared about in this world, and then was put into a position of power where he had to make tough decisions. And maybe he went a little overboard, but he's given this opportunity by Rick to say, hey, man, you can turn it around. And Rick didn't really believe that Negan could change. I mean, Christ, think about how Negan was introduced to the series.
Yeah.
To go from that and I mean, and how gruesome that was to also see in the TV side, to kind of, you know, coalesce the two, and then to jump back, Negan has to feel forever indebted to Rick Grimes for giving him an opportunity to reflect and take 2 years of no violence, 2 years where he wasn't in control, 2 years where he didn't have to take care of a goddamn thing or make any crazy decisions or spill any blood. And then on the other side of that, he's trying to show Rick, no, you changed me, you blind son of a bitch. I'm your greatest creation, and you don't even see it, you know? Like, it's not Carl who ultimately just wants to defy you because you don't give him enough credit, even though that's slowly changed. And he's not any of Rick's love interests who, you know, there's always the you can't fully trust them, especially with how Lori and all that took place. So, I just, this was this moment where Negan pushed Rick and said, or, you know, pulled Rick in and said, I got you, you know, this is, let's go. Let's get the fuck out of Dodge before it's too late. So the evolution of this character, I mean, it's really interesting because he's like the baddest bad guy, but the real pain that he experienced as a character is so great at the same time that you can't really justify his actions, but what would you do? I mean, I'm just going to, like, fucking put yourself in Negan's shoes. If that happened to you, what would you do? Of course you'd fucking lose it. And if you had the charisma that he has and the fearlessness that he had, well, you know, shit, yeah, things are going to go wrong and you're going to cave some people's brains in. The narcissism overtook because it's all he could connect with. He couldn't connect with anything love anymore because he had had the idea of love fully stripped away from him right before his eyes. So I don't know, man, but there's a lot going on just in Alexandria. There's a big horde. Eugene's like an adrenaline junkie. Michonne has decided that she's just this badass. I mean, she is a badass, but she's like, I'm a badass who can also strategize like a pro. We're going to take turns chopping a few of them down at a time and just switch on and off. That's how you do it.
Her and Jesus are like playing Dynasty Warriors.
Yes, exactly. Oh, that's such a good reference.
That's what it made me think of. Like, she just like plowing through hordes of people. Like, that's all like Dynasty Warriors was. Like, all these... You have these big badass generals, and then it's like thousands and thousands of small-time soldiers that don't mean anything that just litter the fields with their bodies.
Yeah, the hack and slash gaming, love it. Hyrule Warriors also.
Yeah, yeah, and there's a Dragon Quest one too, and then there's a Fire Emblem one coming out now.
Oh, cool, cool, very neat. But I don't know, Brando. What do you see on the other side of 163? This wasn't, like I said, it didn't have a crazy cliffhanger. There's not a whole lot going on. The saviors are in waiting. This massive thousands and thousands and thousands of walkers is going to spill through the streets of Alexandria. This is the first time since they found the safe zone that Alexandria has been under this much threat from walkers and not someone like Negan.
Yeah, I mean, man.
And, I mean, that's almost 100 issues ago, Brando, to put it. I mean, 163 is only 10 issues from when they first found Alexandria in issue 72.
It's crazy.
Super crazy. Wow. That's wild. We're like just like steamrolling to 200 so quick.
I know, dude. And it's, I mean, I don't really exactly know where we go.
I mean, do you have the Whisperers come back and actually take some major players out of the game for good?
Well, because, I mean, the Whisperer War story arc is finished, but Beta's still alive. So, I mean, it's not over. Like, that part of that story is not over, so I don't know where exactly we end up. I mean, obviously, with that many walkers, Alexandria is lost for now. Weren't the Hilltop people writing for Alexandria?
Yeah, but I don't think we ran into them in this issue.
No, we didn't. But I want to say, like, on the last issue, like, they were getting ready to leave for Alexandria.
Correct.
So, you know, this probably won't happen, but it would make me laugh if Negan is carrying Rick and they go to, like, get indoors somewhere, because, I mean, they're closed into the city. The only place they can get out is if they climb over the wall. But how funny would it be if they end up and the only safe place to be is inside Negan's cell?
Oh, that would be a gnarly, like, callback to all this shit. Well, I mean, he doesn't have a cell anymore, but, right?
Right.
Or do they just leave the cell unlocked? No, he has a little house or something.
Yeah,
right?
They gave him a place. But, like, that would just be funny if him and Rick ended up locked in there together.
Negan, it's like, well, what do you want to do to pass the time? Play some Negan, cards or some shit?
Yeah, Negan would probably find it pretty humorous.
That'd be actually kind of brilliant and terrifying to have those two trapped in the cell with the walkers taking over Alexandria. You know, Rick doesn't know what's happening with Andrea or Michonne or any of his team. He obviously doesn't know what happened at the Hilltop and what's going on with Carl. And just to be like what he considers possibly the end of his life, and he's with, you know, is essentially his arch nemesis, who's trying to be his best friend, who he now owes a life debt to. I mean, how crazy is that?
Yeah, Negan's like, so what now, boss? You know, and Rick's like, what? He goes, well, how are you going to get out of this one, Rick? Why are you talking to me like that? Like what? What are we going to do?
You know, quit saying we. There's no we.
Like
there's
we'll
a
see,
me Rick, and there's a you.
Rick, he characterizes Negan as in such a certain way that he doesn't see him yet in a different light, right? He doesn't see Negan as a changed person. He sees Negan the villain. He sees Negan the guy that caused him so much problems. And so, like, in all their conversation before, where it's like, all these changes and all these different things were like written right into Negan's dialogue. But we are seeing this through the eyes of Rick, so we are instantly caused to distrust him. So I think, in a way, that's the ultimate swerve, is to have, there is no Negan swerve coming. This is Negan. He's changed. And since we are sympathetic with Rick, we are constantly wondering, when is he going to frickin' throw Rick under the bus? When's he going to trip him, you know? And as this panel, with him saving him, you know, as that shows, that's obviously not in Negan's plan. He didn't have to do that.
Yeah, you're right. He didn't. And I will say also another thought that I had was, what if Negan is there after the walkers have overtaken Alexandria and now they're gone? Now the saviors come in, okay? And I want to talk about what's going to happen. The saviors are lying in wait. They're sitting there. They're waiting for their moment to strike. It's obvious that they're waiting for the moment where Alexandria is at its weakest. They're going to swoop in and take over. And this is not Negan's plan. But is it? What if it is? What if this is what I think would be super interesting, and it's going to throw you off even more. what if the Saviors overtook Alexandria, rounded everybody up, you know, they, you know, through, because one thing they don't talk about in the comics is the idea of banter happening and people telling other people and, like, hidden spies within camps and stuff, and I think that's possible. You know, there's maybe someone who used to be a Savior who's now in Alexandria who still communicates with the Saviors every now and again. And how interesting would it be if they were like, you know, they round everybody up and they're like, Negan, rise. And Negan stands up and they're like, and Negan's like, what the fuck do you want me to do? I'm just, you know, are you going to kill me first or something? And they walk out and they hand him Lucille too, you know? And it's like a reinforced, maybe it's a steel bat this time. That way it doesn't break, boss, and they hand it to him. And the lineup is the fucking Alexandria group, and it mimics and mirrors issue 100, and we're here again. And Negan's kind of talking, but you can tell it's different. You know, I've waited a long time for this. I had 2 years to think about this. Blah, 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 blah. Everything makes you think he's pointing to Rick. He picks up the bat to swing it, turns around and takes out the current Savior's leader, and starts just laying waste. And saves the group. Now everybody has a different opinion of Negan. Now everybody has seen he's changed. You know? And I think that would be, because I feel like you're right, there is no swerve coming. He is the good guy now, or at least a better guy than he was.
Like an anti-hero?
Like an anti-hero. However, I also think that there has to be at least one more big moment of, like, say, redemption or proving himself before everyone in Alexandria can start to trust him even a little bit.
Yeah.
Because that's a really tall task, man. I mean, that's for Rick to trust him is one thing. Rick telling everyone else to trust him isn't going to fucking fly.
Especially Maggie.
Especially Maggie. There's no fucking way. She's going to be so pissed that Negan's been fighting with Rick. I don't even know what she's going to do, man, honestly. Because that hasn't happened. Since since everything has went down, Negan and Maggie have not been face-to-face one last time.
Yep.
So, I don't know, Brando. Good thing 164 comes out later this month. We get 2 issues in February. It's a short month, and we get more Walking Dead. How nice is that?
That's awesome, man. One thing that I wanted to note for our audience, that we are going to try and go back to something that we did probably over a year ago now, and we're going to try and do a comic book review each episode. Like, we're going to try and read a book a week, you know, and we may stick with a series, we may just go try this series or whatever. So, you know, we normally review The Walking Dead, and that is, and honestly, I think the reason why we do it is because, number one, that's the one series that we both continuously read. That is the series that brought me to this show.
Correct, correct.
You know, and it's definitely one thing that we've always had in common. But next week, we are going to be having a friend on, our good friend Blaine. And we are going to be reviewing the first issue of the Darth Maul series for Star Wars.
Yes!
So, definitely looking forward to reading that. And, buddy, so something happened just this week. So something happened. All right, so we haven't talked about this on air yet. We've talked about it off air. And I believe it was Monday. So Monday this week, the week that we're recording this, we announced our involvement with LaFeeCon. And we did it across all our social media. We launched it with episode 123, where we have a big long, I think like 30-40 minute conversation about like what we're doing in this podcast. And we almost mirrored it with the beginning of this one. It sounds really weird to say that we started our show with gushing about how we do a show.
Yeah, well,
it's funny to think about it. It's like I didn't even realize. It's like, wow, dude. It's like every episode of the show, dude, we do a podcast. It's crazy how cool this is. I know. Let's talk
about it. I think it's good to reflect a little bit on some of the accomplishments we've had on this show. Not that they're, oh my God, earth shattering, you know, the world's going to fucking stop spinning because this incredible event happened. But it matters, man. Some of these things happen, and it's really fucking cool to say you've done it. You know, I spent most of my musical career trying to play the David S. Palmer Arena in Danville, Illinois. It never fucking happened. I did it with my fucking podcast, and people dug it. That, I mean, there's no cooler feeling in that moment. There's no cooler feeling in that moment.
Yeah.
But anyways, to the news that happened this week, Brando, I'm going to let you take it. But before you take it, and I'm gonna set this up for you, I want to say the thing that we're about to talk about, it could be considered like a small thing, if you will. But I think what made it really interesting was, without our knowledge, Brando and I witnessed this all transpire at the exact same time. We reacted probably around the exact same moments, and then were conversing with each other immediately following, or immediately speaking to each other about what happened within minutes. I mean, literally within minutes of this happening, it was like, boom, 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 we were talking about it. But I want to know from your perspective kind of what's going on when this thing transpired and set it up for me.
Okay, so as I said, we announced our involvement with LaFeyCon. And so on Instagram, I posted the LaFeyCon image to our feed, right? So, of course, you know, we're getting some likes, and as I mentioned before, that you know, I have a couple different accounts tied to you know, my Instagram. So I you know, I get likes coming and going pretty often, and I don't always even really look at it. I just go, oh, okay, this and this and this and this. If somebody followed me, okay, this and that. So then I see a name, and I just happen to like read it. And this is the image of the LaFeyCon logo itself that I posted, and it said Adam Carolla. And I went, huh, what? It's gotta be fake, man. Clicked on it, and it's the official Instagram for Adam Carolla. Liked our picture, and I'm just like, hold up. Stop. What? You mean...
Yeah.
Yeah, I completely stopped in my tracks. And I kind of freaked out, and I showed Caitlin, and she was excited. But so we're going to come back to that. Okay. So we had some other podcasts, you know, like the picture as well. And I haven't listened to it yet, but I'm dropping a name to you guys right here now, right on our show. The name of this podcast made me laugh, and it's called Two Hispanics and a White Guy. And on Instagram, their bio is a podcast where three friends discuss movies, video games, and comic books while trying not to embarrass themselves. Sounds like we would get along great. I am just saying. So yeah, Adam Carolla liked the picture, and we both geeked out about it pretty hardcore. Adam Carolla, big time podcaster, of course. Before he even got into podcasting, you know, was even quite, you know, famous and familiar. Anyway, while me and you were talking about this for the first time together, like, okay, so we were messaging each other on Messenger on Monday, freaking out about it. But then when we were, like, yeah, just yesterday, me and you were sitting here and we were talking, and I was going through our Instagram because we were looking at it, right? And then I realized a different picture, a picture from back in September of the Speak No Evil page that you posted. Carolla Drinks, which is the official Instagram of Adam Carolla's Mangria, wine-based 20.9% ABV, ready-to-drink Mangria, an all-new Endless Rant IPA. That randomly like that picture. Is this a coincidence?
You know, I don't think so, Brando. And here I was saying this. I don't remember who I was saying it to. I think I was talking to my sister. And I said, you know, it's weird because it seems like maybe there are certain people that have eyes on us. And I don't know why. I'm not sure what reason Adam Carolla is checking into Journey into Comics. But that's one of those things that, like, sure, maybe Adam Carolla was on his page. He clicked podcast. It just so happened to line up when we just posted the post. He saw it, liked it immediately because it was in his, you know, most recent thing or whatever. But for them to go back to an older post, find that post, like that post, take their time out, they were on our page, whoever the elusive they is, whether it was actually Adam Carolla or otherwise, looking around. And that's pretty interesting to note, too.
Oh, man.
I don't know. It has been a very bizarre couple of weeks for our show. I mean, I showed Veronica the whole Adam Carolla thing, and she was like, "Who?" And then I showed her a picture, and she's like, "Oh, that's sweet." And then I showed Sarah, and Sarah was like, "Holy shit, that's incredible! What?" And I was like, "I know, right? Like, what the fuck?" So I Brandon, I don't know what it means. I don't care what it means, but it was a really cool thing to have happen.
Thanks, you know. Adam Carolla, for the attention and for taking time out to look at our little Instagram. That's awesome. I mean,
he just did his 2,000th podcast.
That's insane. That is insane.
I mean, I'm pretty sure he's maybe one of the earliest podcasters.
He might be. I mean, there's a lot of guys that jumped on right when it was just starting, you know.
I mean, I wish we would have, but, you know, neither here nor there, we didn't know any better.
Well, we were too busy trying to be a band.
That's okay. But Adam Carolla, if you're listening, you're totally welcome on our show any fucking time. Right, yeah. Brando? We would have him on.
Oh, absolutely. And then maybe, you know, vice versa.
There you go. That'd be cool. Roll up on Carolla's show. What up? I don't know what we'd talk about. It'd be random. I don't care.
It'd be completely random.
Sweet. So, yeah, that happened, Brando. Now, I don't know. You said this next thing that I have on the list is something we've done before. So I don't know if you just want to go ahead and skip to the final question of the week. I don't know what our time frame is for recording right now. But, you know, I can't remember if we've done this one before or not, folks, is the running problem.
Yeah, like, okay, so you wanted to have a discussion over who is the best villain for Marvel, DC, and Image. And I'm like, we've had this conversation before.
Well, then let's not have it again. Fuck, I don't want to bore people.
Like,
I just can't remember. Honest, it happens.
And it's like, between the two of us, I mean, we can easily come up with some people, but honestly, this is like a good discussion for like Nerds of the Round Table or something. And
I want to do Nerds 3, man.
I'm definitely all for it. I'm definitely all for it, dude. Maybe we can make that happen when we're together sometime with some peoples. And final question of the week. Appreciate the sound effect.
Sure, I just figured I'd throw it in there.
You know what? You put it on the rundown, you're a pick. And I was like trying to think, what in the hell do I have a question? Like, I don't have a question. And I'm like, maybe I'll think of one during the show. And I totally did not think of one during the show.
That's funny.
And so now it's like, I was trying to avoid being put on the spot. And so, but then you put me on the spot. And now I'm on the spot.
Oh, you're killing me, dude. It's so funny. to hear you scrambling because I've been there. You know, I don't know. I just, last show we brought Final Question of the Week back. I don't ever understand why we stopped doing it. It just kind of fell off the rundowns. So we can bring it back now. Another thing I want to say while you're considering, you know, what the hell you want a Final Question of the Week about, I want to kind of jump back to LafayCon for a second, because you said that if things don't happen as far as having enough guests are concerned, that might open up time for other things. Interestingly enough, it seems like we're going to have almost every member of the Journey into Comics Network family at this event, sans Patrick.
Well, we haven't even talked to Patrick about it yet.
Correct. Hopefully he can make it if that's something that can happen.
I mean, that'd be awesome. I was hoping we'd get to talk to him about it this week, and actually be, like, talk to him in person about it, but that wasn't possible, so, like, we're going to have to hit him up on this and maybe make some plans.
I agree fully. I think that's a smart call.
All right. I got a question.
Sure.
What is something... Okay, so people who listen to this podcast on a regular basis know that I collect video games. You collect comics. We both dabbled in collecting pops. You much more than me. What is something else that you have collected, and maybe go something as far as, like, I don't know, like a little bit more off the wall, but something that people wouldn't necessarily think that you would collect.
Okay, well, wow, that is interesting, Brando. But, you know, honestly, I'm a big ticket collector. Like, I've got all my concert tickets, I've got a lot of my movie tickets, a lot of different events that I've been to, I have tickets for. Now, I know that's, like, kind of a self-collecting thing, that it's stuff I'm generating, so that might be a bad answer. But alternately, I also love to collect stickers of all varieties, just different various stickers. They aren't anything that I, like, hold as, like, oh, I must collect and have the $1 million sticker. But, like, I don't know, I'll collect random, I can't think of what they're called, but they, like, make fun of brands of stuff. Like, instead of Febreze, it's, like, the Fleas or some shit. And it's, like, almost Garbage Pail Kid-esque art. I have some stickers like that, or different company stickers. Here's an interesting collection thing that people may not know about me. I have a stick garden. Go ahead and ask.
What's a stick garden?
What's a stick garden? Well, being that I've been this drummer of Walk Among Us for the past year and change, broken a lot of sticks. That's a real thing. And, you know, I didn't necessarily want to just keep throwing them away. So I started planting them in the rocks outside of our studio. Just randomly, when I break a stick, I take the tip of the stick and I drive it into the ground. And the sticks blossom up. I mean, they don't actually do anything, but it's...
That'd be hilarious if, like, they started sprouting, like, little limbs and...
Did I tell you what happened this past summer?
No. Maybe.
Okay, I'm not making this up, folks. And this is as real as shit can get. I have had this weird occurrence happened twice in my life. After I realized this occurrence has now happened twice in my life, I've been dubbed by some as the Corn King, because flashing back to when I was probably like 12 or 13, I came home from school one day and there was a full stalk of corn growing in our backyard. I mean, just like it was in the fucking cornfield, just out of nowhere. It was incredible. Dad chopped it down because he's like, it's obviously not going to grow well and not taste good. It's not, you know, been handled properly or whatever. And it probably did taste good, but anyways. So this past summer, to flash forward to the second time something weird like this with corn has happened in my life, to completely get off track from the final question of the week, there was corn growing in my gutter.
In your gutter?
In my gutter, I swear to God, dude.
Sounds like they need to be cleaned.
I clean them every summer, every spring. And there are some trees that we have that when it gets real windy and stormy, a lot of that gunk ends up in our gutters. So it's a, I always have to clean those gutters, but they still collect shit often. Gross.
Including corn, but, apparently.
Including corn, which how does corn even, I don't even, how does that even happen? Now, Brando, I gotta know, what's something unconventional that you collect? Also, Game Informer would be something I collect that people wouldn't think that I collect. I like the Game Informer magazine. But anyways, go on, Brando. What's another thing that you collect that people might not know that you're collecting?
Well, neither of these things do I actively collect anymore. But when I was a kid, do you remember how you would take like 50 cents and go up to the sticker machine? And you would slide it in and you would slide it out in a little cardboard thing and you get a sticker? I used to collect all of the like baseball team logos and I would try to get them all. And then I used to collect wrestling figures.
Awesome.
Specifically Jack Specific, WWE figures. When they switched to Mattel, that's when I quit. I'm not a huge fan. They've gotten better. But when the early Mattel figures, I did not like them. The only Mattel figure that I own is still in the box, and that is the WWE Defining Moments Macho Man Randy Savage figure that I have. I only have two figures in the box. I have that one, and I have a WrestleMania 23 Chris Benoit figure that I found a month after his death and family's death. The reason why I have it is because all of his stuff was pulled from the shelves and this got missed. So I bought it. And so I have a whole box. And I am a loose figure collector because I had it displayed because I bought a Jax figure to scale wrestling ring that had cloth and metal posts and stretchy ropes and padded ring pads.
Awesome.
And mine was like the blue, like the big blue cage one from WrestleMania 2.
Yep. I love that ring. You brought it over before.
And then, so I have a whole shitload of figures, all Jack Specific. And then when they went to Mattel and the TNA signed a deal with Jack Specific, I bought one TNA figure and it was classic Surfer Sting. So I have that figure. And then you said Game Informer. I have a pretty big collection of PSM magazine, and that was the old unofficial 100% independent PlayStation magazine. And I had a subscription from like 2003 to 2006 or 7. Do you remember when we had to sell magazines in high school, Nate?
Yeah.
I sold myself a subscription to PSM.
Genius.
And I kept it for a while. And that magazine ended up getting bought, and it became the official PlayStation magazine eventually. But when that started, like in the late 90s, it was just called PSM. And a guy from work on second shift brought me a whole stack of ones from the late 90s. And I have way more of those than I know what to do with. And like, part of me wants to go crazy and just get like a full run of them, you know, like one of every issue. But I know I should not pursue that.
Yeah, that could be a slippery slope.
Yeah, it would be. But yeah, I mean, you know, as you know, obviously, with the big collections of comics and games that we've kind of gone hog wild with, there are definitely some smaller ones. I have gotten out of collecting music. Like I have every single Iced Earth record on CD, and then I have the DVDs and stuff like that from them. But I've gotten out of it because I want to eventually, when I get a new place and a bigger space for my collection habits, I want to collect all of them on vinyl and have a vinyl collection.
Vinyl is awesome to collect. I guess I didn't even consider that I collect vinyl too, or I collect dice. That's a weird one. Like Dungeons and Dragons dice.
That helped decide some tiebreakers at the Journey into Wrestling end of year awards.
Yeah, and I didn't even have all my dice at that time. I've got most of my armada now. So, oh shit, Brando, this has been a phenomenal episode of Journey into Comics. I feel like we've covered a lot and said a lot of things. We've tested a new thing. Now, interestingly enough, I want to mention to people, if you listen to episode 123 of Journey into Comics versus episode 124 of Journey into Comics, this week I am using new equipment. I'm using the Zoom IQ7 for the iPad. It is a microphone interface that plugs directly in through a lightning cable. Brando's recording on his end through his Zoom setup. And you can probably be able to tell the difference pretty easily between how we used to sound. I just bumped the mic, my fault. How we used to sound last episode when I just let the iPad do all the work versus how we sound now, which is with this new thing. Hopefully you'll be able to tell a difference of quality.
You know, maybe a little, you know. It does sound pretty good to me, and with how I have this kind of set up, there's a little bit of white noise, and on 123 you definitely hear the white noise. I can fix it, but I'm not going to just take it off. On Journey to Wrestling 15 that we did yesterday, that is now up, I did take out the white noise, so therefore you can compare 123's no editing to 120, or you know, Journey to Wrestling 15 with editing, and then I'm going to take the white noise out of this. So that way, there's not a constant just fuzz in the background, because it was noticeable to me when I was listening to 123. And it's one of those things that, like, once you listen to it for a while, you stop noticing it because you're listening to what we're saying. But it can almost be like, you know, like a distracting trumpet. So. I like your choice of music that you chose to play with your distracting.
You know.
With that being said, dude, I think that does it for today on our show. You can check out our podcast, this podcast that you're hopefully listening to, if you made it this far. And you can check us out on the podcast services around the globe on iTunes, Podbean, Stitcher, and Google Play Music. Of course, we are also on Twitter, JIC Podcast. We're going to be posting a lot more there. On Instagram, Journey into Comics. Facebook, Journey into Comics. YouTube, Journey into Comics. Are we anywhere else, Nate?
Twitter, JIC Podcast. Did you say that one?
Yeah, that was the first one I said, because that's the one that's really different.
That is the different one. Did you do the Gmail?
I did not do the Gmail.
If you have questions for us at any point in time, doesn't matter what the question is. Like, any question.
We have gotten a personal question that said, what was our favorite toilet paper once?
That's true. We really did, folks. Bounty. Or not Bounty. Quilted Northern.
Angel Soft.
Yeah, Angel Soft. What about paper towel, though? Anyways, I digress. Viva. We don't want to. Me too, dude. Viva's the best.
Hell yeah, man.
But if that's going to do it for this week of Journey into Comics, episode 124, we got to come up with a name for this one.
Good luck with that one.
Well, I don't know that we can, so we're just going to cut it. That's the end of the episode. This has been a great episode of Journey into Comics, episode 124. Again, I'm your host, Nate.
I'm Brando.
And we will check you guys later.